Thank you very much, Brother Ron. That was very interesting and very helpful. In Ecclesiastes chapter 8 and verse 5 is a passage that you mentioned how Ecclesiastes is sometimes a playground for false teachers. And I know a lot of folks have come to this book to teach materialism and to deny that the soul goes on in conscious life after death. And in 9 and verse 5, the Bible says, "For the living know that they will die, but the dead know nothing, and they have no more reward, and the memory of them is forgotten." And in light of what you've said, this being a confession of Solomon, where he looks at the fleeting things of life without divine revelation and divine aid versus the lasting things of reliance on God, how would you interpret this verse and show what's wrong with the materialist?
Well, basically, I think practically every one of the verses that the materialists use, practically every one of them, when you examine them carefully, will come under the category of under the sun. And that is viewing life as man looks at it without the aid of the revelatory message. Also, of course, there's the effect of after death, what you see in this life, you know, compared to thereafter. That would be my basic thought. I'm sure there's a little more detail could be given to that, but that would be my basic thought for typically the verses that the materialists use.
Since you're back there, go ahead and get George. I'll be back there and then we'll get your question.
There's two verses, Brother Ron, that I would like to get your comment on. Chapter
3, verse 21. "Who knows the spirit of the sons of men which goes upward, and the spirit of the animal which goes down to the earth?" Is that teaching that our dog Fifi isn't going to go to heaven?
He doesn't even know about heaven. There's no use for him to go there. Only man has a spirit, so knowing image of man.
It's fair to use that verse to show animals and pets are not going to heaven.
Yes. Yeah, because there's nothing above the sun that would contradict it. In that particular group of passages, which, George, is kind of interesting, you got two ways to think about it, and either way would it permit the materialist to pat himself on the back. One is, he just simply says, as you look at life and death under the sun, without the aid of the revelatory message, how would man know that the death of an animal is any different from the death of a man? He wouldn't know. But he himself, later on in the book, tells us what? The body goes where? And the spirit goes where? The other thing is, that's one explanation. The alternative explanation would be is whether the preacher, pardon me, I'm slow, "who knoweth the spirit of man that goeth upward, the spirit of the beast that goeth downward to the earth." The other explanation could be the idea that he simply asked the question, among men under the sun, who among them even thinks about it? Whether the death of man and the death of animal is any different. I think, really, the former explanation, which I favored this latter one for a long time, but I really think to be more in context with what Solomon, with the preacher, hangs out there, is he just basically says this, who knows? Rather than actually raising the question, who really thinks about the difference? We like to get to that. We like that because we're anxious always to get to what defends us. The truth is, you don't have to be anxious to get there and make a question, because in the long run, the same answer is still there. You have another passage, I think.
One more verse. Chapter 7 and verse 17. "Do not be overly wicked, nor be foolish. Okay, to be just a little bit wicked as long as you don't overdo it.
No. You know, George, this is a passage I wanted to go and review my notes. But you know, you're always irritating to me. You would bring it up and I haven't got to review my notes. But the basic idea simply is this. He's not presenting the idea a little bit of wickedness, a little bit of good goes a long way. Pardon me for not giving a more adequate answer, but I just can't quite pull up in my mind some of the reasoning that shows that that cannot be saying moderate evil is never good. Pardon me for not being able to give a little better answer.
Okay, this young gentleman up here.
Very interesting lesson, certainly very memorable and very interesting. I've always liked your teaching, and your meeting that you held at Edmund over Revelation was certainly very interesting. Solomon has always fascinated me, and his writings especially, the book of Proverbs and Ecclesiastes especially. In my very basic reading of the book of Ecclesiastes, one of the passages that has always kind of perplexed me that I'm hoping to get your comments on, Ecclesiastes, the first chapter, verses 17 and 18, which read, "And I set my mind to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. I realized that this also is striving after wind, because of much wisdom there is much grief, and he who increases knowledge increases sorrow." Why do you suppose that is, and what is your what are your comments on this passage?
Well, basically, he's simply pointing out the fact that he simply set his heart to taste every experience that could be tasted. And in doing so, he did not find an answer to the meaningfulness of life. That's one reason why we can listen well to him. In much wisdom, now he says later in the book, you know, he says that wisdom excelleth foolishness. Well, human wisdom excels human foolishness, and that's beneficial. But the truth is, in the end, it cannot give an answer to the final question of the meaningfulness of life. Human wisdom, as far as it can take us, always leaves this nagging indigestion. Why am I here? There's a number of passages in this book. Like I said, and I said it honestly when I answered George, some of these passages, if my old cranium, if I don't go back and look them over and look them over to try to explain them with some clarity, it's difficult to do. I mean, it's a difficult book. What I'd hope to do today was to give us an overview, to be able to put them in their details. Because this book, man, we need this book. We need this book. Our society, no meaningfulness. Society, suicide, drugs. And yet we as God's people, we flirt with the world far too much. And then wonder what's wrong with the Lord's church, rather than seeing that we've been flirting too much with the... Pardon, I'm supposed to be answering questions, not preaching. Sorry, buddy.
John.
Well, I enjoyed it, Ron. It was great, as I expected. I had a friend who smoked cigarettes. And he always justified it by Ecclesiastes 7 and 16. Be not righteous over much.
Yeah. Well, let's just hope that he only smokes here. Sorry?
Moderation in both.
Yeah, one sense. But yeah, but like I was saying, you know, being moderate and evil never will work.
No.
Never will work.
Brother Ron, a few years ago, you used chapter 11, verse 3 in a very helpful way, and I just thought maybe you might would make comments on that. In the place where the tree falls, there shall it lie. And it helped me.
Well, there's actually two explanations, but I guess the one that I've used and I hope not abused is, the tree falls as you die, so it lies. Tree falls, that's the way she lays. And so when you die, that's where it's at. I guess sometimes you fellas frighten me telling me what I've said. And I just hope usually it's basically right.
All right, Glenn.
I really appreciated your talk. Ecclesiastes has always been fascinating to me. I think one of the benefits, or if you will, I had someone tell me the book is very melancholy, but yet at the same time, it's a cauldron with which in you can put
your
ambitions.
What was the last part of what you said?
Melancholy.
Yeah, the next part. I caught melancholy.
Okay. It's a cauldron in which we can put ambition and have it purify it as far as purpose and meaning. And so it's helpful in that way. But one other thing that I think is a benefit to the book is that Solomon at least gave himself to try to understand his experience, his life. And he comes in Ecclesiastes chapter 9, verse 10, whatever your hands find to do, do it with your might, for there's no activity or planning or knowledge or wisdom in Sheol where you're going. And I think he understood the seriousness and the melancholy that some might think would be the product of his examination of life. But yet at the end of it, he says, don't be lazy. You know, if you've got a life,
and he's not saying,
live it.
People read it and they say, well, I just throw up my hand.
Right, right.
But you see that the roadside rest, all through that book, every so often you'll have what? Enjoy.
Right.
Accept your portion. Do what you can. This is God's gift to you. Mm-hmm. Use it. And then, on top of that, it comes down to that bottom line.
Yeah.
Do it now, because the day comes when you have no pleasure. Sorry.
Right. No. I think that's the design and the flow of the book. By the time he gets to chapter 11, he's basically saying the same thing. He's saying, now listen, he who watch after the wind won't sow. He who does this, if you overly worry about this, you're not going to get anything done. And what he says is, listen, sow your seed in the morning, verse 6. And he talks about if a man should live many years, verse 8, let him enjoy the life. I think he's at the end, he's wrapping it up and saying, now look, there is a purpose. There is a meaning. God gave it to you. Don't waste it.
Yeah. Actually, about chapter 6, about chapter 6, he kind of starts to ease off. Because his first point is, he wants to hammer it home. You ain't got nothing. You know, I've been running around, I'm number one, and I want to tell you what I did. And he said, you ain't got it. You ain't got it. But about chapter 6, now he starts a little before, but in chapter 6, he starts to, I guess, mellow. He's been sipping his tea longer, and he wants to help you more. And so he starts to talk about these things that to help more, and he does that. And then he moves to his conclusion. And as he moves this conclusion, he says to youth in chapter 11, he said, look, youth, you still got energy. You still got strength. You use it. But he wags his finger and says, but remember now, God's going to make you answer. So this old sowing your oats, use your energy for the better crop. And then he moves into this wonderful thing. And this is so meaningful. Remember now the Creator in the days of thy youth, while the evil days come not, nor the years draw nigh, when thou shalt say, I have no pleasure in them. We see, let me see if I can say this, it'll be a little hard. We see aged Christians, they age. Their spirits are fine, but their bodies are what? And they reach the point They reach the point where they say, Father, take me now, for I have no pleasure anymore in these days. And in so doing, he takes his children home. The golden bowl is broken. The lamp of light has fallen. And there she lies on the floor. And as we pick up the pieces, we cry, we smile, but we understand better than we've ever understood before.
Enjoyed it, Ron. You mentioned Ryken. You quoted from Ryken. Are you talking about Words of Delight or some
yes.
other book? Words of Delight?
Yeah. Leland Ryken and his Words of Delight, and I need to give credit here. I can't remember exactly what he said, but it was out of that, as I pondered the book and him, I kind of pictured in my mind these contrasts. And